Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, we've been talking about Occupy Wall Street for a while. We talked about how, from its inception, not a lot of people involved really knew why they were there or what their grievance was. Even fewer people actually know what they want Congress or anyone else to do about their grievances. Between the rapes and the murder, at least one of those, just the general lack of sanitation, I think the credibility of this movement went downhill. And our good news today is that it took another major step downhill because they planned a number of major rallies yesterday. The one on Capitol Hill kind of fizzled, but 1,000 of them supposedly did show up at the White House last night. And then the whole thing got dispersed because a smoke bomb got tossed into the front yard of the White House. And, well, if there's anything the Secret Service doesn't like, it's incendiary devices aimed at the White House. So that kind of got broken up. Nobody arrested, which was kind of interesting. But in the end, on the one hand, it looks like they still got some numbers for certain events. But on the other hand, it looks like they're more just a bunch of radicals than anything else with that type of activity going on.
Yeah, one of the reasons I would nominate this as a good martini is apparently Pelosi said something that kind of said, well, you know, Occupy Wall Street doesn't speak for us. You're starting to see a little bit of separation between the Democratic Party and Occupy Wall Street. And I think it was a while ago that one of my friends had said that the moment the Occupy Wall Street movement becomes a political liability for Democrats, they're going to get Cindy Sheehan'd, which is to say they will disappear. Cindy Sheehan was you know, dominating the headlines when she was anti-Bush. She got upset with Democrats in Congress, ran against Nancy Pelosi in her San Francisco district. And Cindy Sheehan disappeared from news coverage because she no longer served the narrative. Well, when you're throwing smoke bombs at the White House, I don't think you're really – one, I don't think you're mainstream at all. I don't think there's any much of an argument. But it becomes impossible for the press to really argue that this is some sort of mainstream, middle-class America, broad-based populist movement based on righteous outrage. They look like a bunch of cranks and thugs and they probably would object to the term terrorist, but let's face it, you know, Tea Partiers got compared to Timothy McVeigh because they yelled at congressmen, all right? And these people are throwing, you know, things that explode at the White House. So I, you know, one other thing worth noting, this was on page A2 of the Wall Street Journal. As Jonah noted in the corner, this was a local Metro story in the Washington Post. If a Tea Partier had thrown a smoke bomb at the White House, right. Do you see any scenario in which it's not at the not on the front page?
So, it's above the fold, guaranteed.
The good new martini is that the Occupy movement has effectively marginalized themselves, that they are no longer a useful tool to the Democratic Party. They're a liability. And look, the fact that they're protesting on Capitol Hill, apparently there's some great story about them focusing on Carl Levin, the Democratic senator from Michigan. The fact that they're protesting the White House with Obama in it shows that they are no longer allies. And the more we can get Occupy Wall Street and the Democratic Party to fight each other, the better it is for us, Greg. So hurrah to this, I say.
Except
for throwing smoke bombs. Don't do that, kids.
In terms of how this has played out, I got to give a little bit of credit to the Occupiers because we all kind of thought they were just these knee-jerk college kids looking for a cause to pretend they were like their parents back in the 60s. But I think they might actually be paying attention to the fact that Barack Obama's previous chief of staff was from an equity firm. His new chief of staff is from an equity firm. And his new budget director is from Bain. So to try and now paint himself as this stark contrast from Mitt Romney, if Romney's the nominee, or you know, these other Wall Street friendly politicians, I think these people are actually paying attention a little bit. And the president's going to have to try some other smoke and mirror tactic, no pun intended on the smoke effect there, to try and get these people back in the fold. I also noticed, though, to talk about your thought about the movement eventually petering out here, the big picture on the local NBC website was of this huge red flag with black lettering, which I'm a big fan of the musical Les Mis. I don't know if you are, Jim, but there's a rebellion in that one, too, with those same colors, and it doesn't turn out well. And I think that one's kind of heading in the same direction.
Where is Inspector Javert when we need him?
Exactly. The barricade was not a good ending, and it won't be a good ending for the occupiers either. So on to martini number two now, and back to Mitt Romney, who we mentioned just there in passing. And the big deal at the debate on Monday night, in addition to Newt Gingrich's verbal smackdown of Juan Williams, was the early gang up on Mitt Romney about his time at Bain, and specifically Rick Perry, and to some extent Newt Gingrich as well, asking Romney to release his tax returns. And Romney said, yeah, I'll do that if I'm the nominee after April 15th. Well, apparently that's not going to be soon enough. It looks like he's going to do it. He did mutter something yesterday about how when you do see the numbers, it'll look like he paid after deductions about 15%, which shows that most of his income came from investments and capital gains and that sort of thing, which is perfectly fine. I think if that's the way you're making money, it's a smart way to do it, especially since the tax rates are lower if you're in that type of bracket. But in the end, we're going to hear a lot more about the Romney rule than the Buffett rule going forward here, Jim, and that might be a hard narrative for Romney to smack down.
Yeah, it's not so much that this is a grand scandal, but I'd say right now my faith in Romney's ability to effectively argue about these points is a little shaken. Look, I mean, you know, Mitt Romney makes most of his money through investments. Don't we all wish we could do that? You know, that's and so what people will not really see that distinction. They will think this is somehow some scam or some sort of special deal that only rich people get or something like that. And the answer is that, look, if you have the income, you know, disposable after-tax income that you can put into investments, then your investment income will be taxed at the same rate. A lot of people will just have this knee-jerk reaction of, we should tax it more. And kind of an interesting question will be, or why is he paying 15% and I'm paying higher, et cetera, et cetera. The interesting question will be, all right, why should investment income be taxed more than income? Why should investment be taxed less than income? I mean, ideally, the old argument is that if you want more of something, you tax it less. If you want less of something, you tax it more. Taxes are a repellent and an impediment. Well, you know, if you increase taxes on investment, you will make it a less useful way to use your money and people will do it less. If you want people to invest more, you cut the taxes on it. The idea, you know, and whether all these nuances will get across in this argument, I'm not quite so sure. I just have this feeling they'll be, rich guy, you know, and there'll be just this primal scream of frustration. And what should be a good opportunity for you know, arguing for, you know, sweeping tax reform and elimination of a wildly complicated tax code, instead will turn into more of this populist, you know, claptrap we've seen over the last couple of days of how rich people are evil. And I hope Mitt Romney has a fantastic, you know, argument for this, but I'm just not quite – my faith is shaken, Greg. My faith is shaken.
I think there's reason to be a little bit worried about that because he looked a little bit weathered on Monday night. We'll see what happens tomorrow night in the CNN debate, and there's already rumors that Romney might try to squelch future debates if he keeps winning here, and that's not a good way to prep for the general campaign. So let's hope that behind the scenes he is prepping for what will obviously be a major thrust of the Obama campaign because, let's face it, the only thing they've got is trying to demonize the Republican nominee, and that will be the hallmark since that's been one of their major talking points all along anyway, this class envy, class warfare shtick. So we'll find out. Meanwhile, Newt yesterday got the first martini, the good martini, for his very eloquent and very forceful rebuttal to Juan Williams suggesting that because Newt wanted poor people to get jobs, that somehow that was racially tinged. Well, Newt loved that so much, he decided to turn that entire answer into a campaign spot, copyright Jim Garrity, 2012. And then he decided that because that answer was so good and because he's in second place in the South Carolina polls, that everybody that's lower than him in the polls should just get out. Rick Santorum, out. Rick Perry, out. Didn't know that he mentioned Ron Paul. But I'm sure he wants him to get out as well. He claims that only he is capable of launching a nationwide conservative campaign because, after all, he orchestrated the one in 1994, so obviously he can do it again. And once all the other conservatives are out of the race, he'll easily beat Mitt Romney. Done and done, right, Jim?
I was going to say, you see the very best of Newt and the very worst of Newt in a very short span. You know, when it comes to the populist drum beating on Bain, and then you see the fantastic stuff on discussing race with Juan Williams. And then, of course, you see this sudden reversal in which everybody in front of me get out of my way. All of you have beaten me in Iowa and New Hampshire. Clear the path. I think it was a moment ago on Twitter, Chris Barron had observed, someone should tell Newt that the good cop, bad cop routine usually involves more than one person. but if this happens to work, I don't think it will, but let's say Rick Perry and Rick Santorum hear this message and they're persuaded and some sort of Jedi mind trick sort of thing makes we'll get out, Newt. We'll let you live. This is a fantastic idea. And I think the Gingrich strategy is to try this to get, you know, Santorum and Perry out, then use it on Romney, and then use it on Barack Obama. And then Newt Gingrich will be elected president because he will persuade everybody to drop out of the race. The one little flaw in that is that I don't think anyone will, you know, any of these guys will actually do that. I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, little occasional murmurs of Rick Perry's in trouble, but I think his view and I think the folks around him will be like, look, having already flirted with leaving the race once, stay in until the first Southern primary and just see how he does. I mean, if Rick Perry doesn't catch fire in South Carolina, you have a tough question to wonder where he is going to. And Perry has indicated that he will be in until Florida, but, you know, not long ago, John Huntsman was insisting that third place in New Hampshire was a ticket to ride, and it turns out you can't buy that ticket on points, at least not with 17 points. So I think it is unlikely, and I think this is what, you know, just when people are starting to like Gingrich again, he gets arrogant and says, look, you know, everybody clear a path for me. I'm the only guy who can save this country.
Well, there you go. And it's the humility that everyone has always warmed up to with Newt Gingrich. So we'll see. We'll see what martini he gets tomorrow, because he's definitely dominated the discussion so far this week. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it already, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.